and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. This is Queer Media. This is a bit of a velvety studio kind of episode. Velvet Studio, sorry. Enough people get our name wrong that I don't think I should contribute to that.
Well, there's velvet. It's right there.
True. We actually have the curtains are quite velvety looking. No, we used to be called the Velvet Studio, now we're Can Queer, but whenever we do kind of art-based or culture-based shows, we kind of like to have that label, kind of a bit of a throwback to the culture programming we used to do. So,
well, we still do on occasion.
Absolutely. So this is under our Velvet Studio umbrella for folks who might be curious. But yeah, we're very excited. We have Mike Tattersall with us. Hello. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. You?
Excellent. I'm doing very well. And we have Sebastian. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm scratching a cat's butt.
These things happen. And it's joining us, of course, is the lady of the hour, Elizabeth Lister. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, today we're going to be exploring the topic of gay erotica.
Written erotica.
Written gay erotica, yes. But what surprised me was that the majority of it, apparently, so sources say, is written by women. Is this something that you have come across?
Oh, yes. I have a few friends who write erotica for their, not for their own gender, but yeah, I have several women friends who write gay erotica, and it's quite good. Yeah.
I think these days it definitely is, because women really started writing it, or I discovered that women were writing it on fan fiction in 2011.
Yes.
And there was a huge female audience, and that really surprised me, because at the time I thought I was the only woman who enjoyed idea.
About 2 years ago, we did an episode on slash fiction.
Yes.
And it was, what was her name? I don't remember her name. Shannon. She used to be a regular on the show, and she was a huge fan of it. And I actually remember
She led the whole program, actually. She kind of walked us through.
In the early days of the internet, I remember the first slash fiction I came across. I didn't even know it was slash fiction. I didn't know it existed.
I have a funny story about that, actually, when you're done.
But I do remember the title. I remember it was called Bullets for Bedlam. And it was an X-Files slash fiction.
Nice.
With Mulder and Krycek. But before Krycek got the fake hand, and the actor who played Krycek was a very attractive.
I think it kind of that kind of makes sense, because later when we talk to Opal, when we play the interview, she said, which I recorded earlier, she said that she was trying to write the kind of Harlequin romances of the day, you know, but she worked in the community industry and kind of knew that there was certainly going to be a trend towards the online and the kind of ebook industry that came out. I want to say too much because, of course, we'll hear that in just a few minutes, but I can't believe that's kind of where these writers may have been born out of, because I remember when fan fiction was a thing, and like pro boards like powered a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Myself and a friend of mine, we had a pro boards account, and it was based on like the world of Harry Potter, but without any of the characters.
Okay.
And I think we had about 20,000 posts just between the two of us.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was.
I think those are generally considered to be the safest of the fanfics and slashfics, when you have another story in the same universe using the same rules and stuff, because then you're not really violating canon in any way. And that's actually, that is how the Star Wars universe ended up exploding in size.
Cool.
Because there's, I think there's like 300 or something like that Star Wars books in total, most of which are technically fanfics and are no longer canon now that Disney bought the product. But still, I mean, there's about 20 books, I think, on Hosk alone.
Wow.
Who's barely even a named character. His name is in the credits of Empire Strikes Back. But anyway, totally unrelated to gay erotic fiction, but still, I mean, it is on the topic of fanfics.
It's really interesting to know that that's where it came out of. So did you used to write slash fanfiction?
Well, this is my funny story. So I was reading straight fanfiction for a while.
The worst.
Yes, well. It was, I didn't mind it, but there was this stuff called slash fanfiction that I avoided like the plague, because to my mind that meant it was horror.
Oh, yes.
Blood and guts.
Which is what a lot of people thought.
So I avoided it, and then somehow I found out what it was, and I couldn't believe it, and here I'd been avoiding it this whole time, so then I started to read the slash fan fiction and never went back to the straight fan fiction.
And why is that?
Well, because I loved it so much.
Okay.
You know,
well,
it was...
what made it different, other than the...
What made it different? Well, just, I think the whole uniqueness of the stories, because if you think about straight erotica or straight romance, everything's been done a million times.
Okay.
And you can sort of take similar stories, but make them brand new. With if there's two men or there's
right.
two women. Now we're talking about the gay male erotica, which is the big thing right now. And the other thing is, I thought I was the only woman in the world who found this really sexy. And then on the fan fiction sites, people can post reviews of the chapters mm-hmm. as they're read. And so there were all these other women saying, this is so hot, this is amazing. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wow, okay. I guess it's not that weird.
I think we should be clear to our listeners as well what the slash comes from, because it's not horror. It's
yeah.
slashes and forward slashes.
Yeah. That's right.
The punctuation
parents.
Character. And
yeah.
it started as Kirk
and Spock.
And Spock.
Yes.
And it's Kirk slash Spock. So the slash fiction is basically two typically non-paired names
right.
from a story that get paired.
Or from two stories that are similar, like
yeah.
Batman and Superman.
So Harry slash Malfoy is actually a thing.
That's a big
oh,
one. That's
huge.
A big thing.
I was a big fan of the Harry Malfoy guy.
I think we all.
So we're actually going to jump into the interview with Opal. And when we get back, we'll pick up right where we left off. And we'll have more of the conversation around gay male erotica and kind of maybe some of the reasons why that kind of has become as popular as it has.
Okay, well, I graduated from the University of Waterloo many years ago, where I met my husband. We've been married ever since. I started writing romance when I had my kids, my two sons, and I seemed to be writing hotter than the normal romances, and I just sort of went with that. Erotic romance was just starting to take off at that point. First of all, it was Harlequins I was trying to write. Desire, their Desire line was fairly hot, and then Blaze. But then I broke into the ebook publishing, and that's where the real erotic romance was going on. I started writing erotic romance, and eventually I kept trying to get published with a big New York publisher, and eventually that happened. And so I was one of the first erotic romance authors for St. Martin's Press, which is part of Macmillan. Yeah. They're short books. They have all range of sensuality levels from, you know, they don't, you know, they just have a kiss to fairly erotic. But I really haven't kept up with how they are lately, how steamy they get. I know mainstream romance gets pretty steamy. pretty explicit. But romance is let's see. Erotic romance will go more into the bedroom, whereas a romance may close the door or maybe go in a certain amount. Erotic romance is just no holds barred. You know, the language can be very, very explicit, and you're really exploring those areas of sexuality, and areas of sexuality where other romances wouldn't. Harlequin, I don't know now, but I would assume they're mostly heterosexual romance, one man, one woman. In erotic romance, I mean, I can explore menage. I can explore really anything, which is great, and it all depends on your publisher. There are limits. I mean, different publishers have different comfort levels. A lot of that is actually based on what the print bookstores are happy with. I mean, they have to, that is a gateway in a way. I mean, there's a smaller market. I don't know where to say. I can do more with my e-books. Like, they'll give me more leeway on my e-books than they will on print books. And that's just because, you know, you have to meet a broader market. I mean, things have been going crazy just with self-publishing, with the e-books taking off over the last few years. So the e-book market exploded. I have a computer background. This was not at all surprising to me. It seemed surprising to some people, but, I mean, it's the way it goes. Now there's sort of resurgence to print. People do want print, but, you know, it's not going to be back the way it was. I mean, yes, there... people are buying a lot of ebooks. That's really, and I think people are more comfortable looking online to find their erotic romance. I know the fellows in the bookstore, or the people in the bookstore, one fellow told me, yeah, I'm lucky, my books are actually shelved in the romance area. He said when people go into the erotic area, like they come to him to ask for about a book, and he'll take them, say, to my books. In romance, they're very comfortable looking, but with erotica, they're kind of looking around, and you know, like if somebody comes and put the book down, he said the books are always kind of messed up. But just people aren't quite as comfortable in the bookstore. But at home, I mean, you can look at the covers, you can read the backgrounds, you're not worried about any of that. And they're also categorized. It's easier to find what you want, especially with ebook-specific sites, because they'll actually categorize them in the different areas of interest for erotica readers. There were a lot of us writing erotic romance before that, but that brought it more mainstream. And the whole idea that BDSM was sort of exciting, and people wanted to know a little more about that. So we got a lot more readers come in and say, okay, what is this all about, and where can we find more books like this? As part of a heterosexual romance, yes. So I often have menage. Sometimes the men are involved with each other. I have one book, Illicit, and it was kind of risky at the time I came out of it, out with it, but there were three men. It was just after 50 Shades, actually. And I had already been writing it when that came out, but there were three men involved, and two were a couple, and the other man was involved with them sexually, intimately, mainly because he was just sort of tired of the, you know, he'd been hurt by women, and he just found this worked for him. But then when this woman comes into the picture, that kind of changed things, and he sort of opened up a bit to her. But it was sort of all four of them were involved. And I've done that in other books where, yes, there is a male, two men in a relation. Yes, there definitely is. I don't know how large it is. I go to Sexapalooza in the Ottawa area, the large show in February. And, I mean, the first year I did that, a man came up to me and said, I bought your book in an airport in Vancouver, actually, and he loved them, and he said he'd bought every one since then. I know I have a number of gay men who like to read my books, and I've made friends over the years. Actually, an author approached me in New Jersey when I was there and introduced himself. He was an author as well, writing actually heterosexual romances, and he and I have become really good friends and have kept in touch, and we actually cross promote a lot. We do a lot of projects together. Well, they look on my website, opalcarew.com, and hopefully sign up for my newsletter, because what I do, what a lot of authors do, is I give away a free book, but I try to give away a number of pieces that will let them know what my writing is like, because especially if you want to read an erotic romance author, you want to know, do I like how they write the sex? Because that's important. Does it fit with what I like? Is it emotional enough? Is it sexy enough? So I give away a compilation of sex scenes from my books. I also write as Ruby Carew, and that's erotica, very short erotica. So I give one of those books away, and I give a number of them away. So if people, they can go on my Facebook page and actually sign up for my reader group, and I'm Opal Carew. on Facebook as well. And I think the first thing you asked, I didn't hear. So do I have anything? Oh, yeah, I'm very prolific. I'm writing all the time. I'm having 2 to 3 releases a month. Sometimes they're short stories that I then bundle. And I have a St. Martin's release, Affair to Remember, which is a woman cab driver. I play with different type of roles. A woman cab driver and two men, billionaires, because that's very popular and I like writing those. I have Heat coming out in June, which is firefighters. I have an interesting one right now, though, called Dirty Talk, and it's exploring basically sexual trauma. This woman has a sexual trauma in her background. She's terrified of men, absolutely terrified. And I asked my artist for the cover to get the scariest looking guy with tattoos and muscles and, you know, just really scary looking. And she did a fabulous job. So if people want to look up Dirty Talk, Secret Pleasure. It's actually a serialized book. It comes out in four parts. But it explores that. And in fact, I have done something different with it. I have an erotic audio with it. So I'll give a little bit away, not too much. In the first story, she listens to this audio because she's terrified of men, but she still has her sexual urges. So she listens to this audio, and it's very sexy, and she, you know, finds her release that way. And then, you know, it's sort of what happens, how this progresses, and how... can I give a bit of a spoiler?
Hopefully get them hooked.
The end of the first story is she finds out that the man who's moved in next door is the voice on the audio. And so, she, of course, she now is stays away from him. But she's not afraid of him, even though he's a really scary guy, because her trauma was actually based on someone who was well-dressed and very charismatic. And he's not that, but he's very sensitive. And so it really appeals, I think, to a lot of people, because he's a very strong, powerful man, but he just wants to be loved. And when he sees women, like, women will look at him and be kind of terrified, and there's a reason why he's like that. I mean, he had trauma in his past as well. So it's a very poignant story, and I'm trying something different with the erotic audio that people are quite enjoying it. So, yeah, if people want to look up Dirty Talk, well, you always get inspiration from real life, right? From looking around, from talking to people, from things you watch and you see, everything becomes, you know, I find the oddest things working into my books. My friend, who she actually represents romance authors, she'll have things happen in her life, and I'll say, okay, Laurie, I'm putting this in the book, is that okay? But things like she had a concussion, and my next character wound up with a concussion because it just worked, right? And the apartment she's living in, which actually I used to live in many, many years ago, and my son has at one point, is in the current book, is in Dirty Talk. So often I can't set in Ottawa because my publisher doesn't like that, so my self-pub. So it's set in Ottawa over, you know, near Mooney's Bay. And so those kind of things, but also just what happens to people, how people react to things. It's not specifically events that I'll take. I'm not, you know, taking people's lives, but any experience I've had or anyone I've talked to has had, it just tells you about the emotions and how people react to things, and it may trigger something inspiration or in my heart and say, oh, that feels a certain way and I want to capture that. Well, about writing would be to find other writers to talk to share with, to learn about the market. About writing the erotic side, I mean, yes, read other erotica, things that you really like, books you really enjoy, and see how the author handles that aspect of it, because everyone has their own style, but so you can see by the things that appeal to you as a writer, as a reader, what type of thing you would write, or how you would want to write. But yeah.
All right, well, we'll get people to check out your website and hopefully peruse your stuff. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Oh, my pleasure, anytime.
You have a great day.
You too. Thank bye-bye. You.
Des amours meurent, des amours naissent, les siècles passés disparaissent. Ce que tu crois être la mort, c'est une saison et rien de plus. Un jour lassé de cette errance, tu t'en iras. Quelle importance, car la terre tournera encore, même quand nous ne tournerons plus. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Fais-moi sourire au beau milieu d'un requiem. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Les étincelles deviennent des flammes, les petites filles deviennent des femmes. Ce que tu crois être l'amour, c'est un brasier et rien de plus. Nos déchirures, nos déchéances, on pense qu'elles ont de l'importance. Mais demain renaîtra le jour comme si nous n'avions pas vécu. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Fais-moi sourire au beau milieu d'un requiem. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Je t'aimerai encore quand la terre ne tournera plus. Des amours naissent, des amours meurent. Ce soir enfin je n'ai plus peur. Je sais que je t'aimerai encore quand la terre ne tournera plus. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Fais-moi sourire au beau milieu d'un requiem. Embrasse-moi, dis-moi que tu m'aimes. Fais-moi danser.
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. You're listening to us from, it could be Lethbridge, it could be St. John, it could be Auckland, New Zealand. We are all over the place. And you just heard Requiem by Alma, which is France's entry to Eurovision. Now, for folks who are long-term listeners, I think for the past 4 or 5 weeks now, I've played a Eurovision entry each yeah. week. Because Eurovision is coming up, and of course, more drama.
Of course.
more drama. It wouldn't be Eurovision otherwise.
Yeah, the Russian singer is banned, and it's ambiguous as to whether or not that individual is banned or Russia is banned from participating. No,
the individual is banned because she performed in Crimea, the annexed part of
yes.
Crimea.
Yeah.
Now, the Ukrainians said that they won't let anyone play who's performed in the annexed part of Crimea. The Russians picked the one person who has
yes.
performed.
And that was we all know that.
Yeah, and of course, the Ukraine banned them, so... Scandal. It's all going on. Don't forget, we'll be doing coverage of Eurovision
just love
in
the fact
May.
That Eurovision does as much for Europe as the UN does. Not the UN, the EU.
Yeah.
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 The Eurovision is as effective at ironing out these long-standing problems as the EU.
Absolutely.
Sometimes more effective. It's weird. But anyway, so...
But we're going to go back to the topic at
yes.
hand. Earlier we heard about Opal Carroll, who has published a very substantial number of books. We talked a little bit about how prolific a writer she was.
Didn't really get into the topic that much, unfortunately.
Not as much as I would have liked.
No. So this is actually something I have a little bit of insight to, because I actually met Opal about 4 years ago when I had Thanksgiving with her family. Now, as it happens, my roommate at the time was childhood friends with Opal's son, and they found out that I couldn't go home for the holidays, so they invited me around.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Opal's a lovely woman.
She is.
Very hyperactive cats, though. Couldn't do anything without them tearing anything apart. But anyway, so apparently one of the things she's known for is writing about the kink experience, and a lot of people who read her books... of course, everybody experiences kink in a different way, but the sort of emotional content and the sort of intellectual content involved in participating in kink, a lot of people say that she nails it.
Oh,
good.
That even if she's writing about something that you yourself don't do, the way she expresses what it feels like to be in that moment, a lot of people see themselves.
Right.
So she's sort of known for that. And also, she wrote a scathing review of 50 Shades of Grey that was taken very seriously.
Yes.
Of all the reviews out there, hers was one of the top most
yeah.
read.
Right.
Absolutely. And of course, her book Illicit has the menage a trois with two male characters getting it on, which of course Opal mentioned earlier. So if you're looking for a gateway book, then certainly we would check
laughing?
That out.
It's a true thing.
No,
gateway
it's great. No, it's
a true thing.
It's good. A gateway
People
book
need
is
to
awesome.
Be introduced.
Of course.
Absolutely. Actually, Opal says, that, as we heard in the interview, that she does these newsletters, and she kind of gives out samples of her erotic writing, because of course it's almost... a degree of trust, you know, as to the writing. I actually read, and it's right there, I don't have my glasses on, Jean Amouel, The Shelters of Stone book, which is very, very, very good, and it's about a female Neolithic character. But there's a sex scene in it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, wow, like a straight sex scene. And I got all hot and bothered under the collar.
I read those books when I was 14. There's a whole series.
I know.
A series of hot.
I'm reading them, and my mum walks in, and I'm like, I'm just reading a book. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you want to go there, we could talk about Robert A. Heinlein and Stranger in a Strange Land.
That I haven't read.
Oh,
I started to, but I didn't.
It is. It was banned in the States for quite some time because it's a totally normal speculative science fiction. And then right in the middle, there's an orgy scene.
Huh.
Oh, I didn't get to that
high
part.
Detail one as well.
Nice. So
add that
further.
To my library.
Yes, exactly.
Library card.
And most of the characters are bisexual as well, so it's a very involved.
But the point here is Opal shares elements, because of course if you're reading it for the point for those scenes, you kind of want to know, you know, is the emotional reflection
right.
there, you know, is it got the type of detail I want to have.
Yeah.
Actually, during the break,
does she use terms like throbbing lingam?
Yes. No one should use that's
well,
disastrous.
It depends on the environment you're writing about. If you're talking about the sacred tantral practices, then that's fine.
Okay, apart from that one scenario. you know, and that's about it.
Yeah,
or if you're Chuck Tingle, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, absolutely. We will get to Chuck Tingle. Now, in the meantime, So as a writer, how much pressure is there to get those scenes right? And are the critics particularly critical? That's the right word, yeah.
Oh, I mean, there's a huge pressure to get those scenes right, and especially as a woman who's writing gay male erotica. I mean, luckily, I'm a straight woman, so I know men's bodies pretty well. but, you know, like, I don't see that there's much of a difference, certainly in terms of arousal and response and climax, between a woman having an orgasm, a man having... But there are some. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a huge pressure to get it right and to... personally, to make sure the reader gets off on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, a good writer can be any character in their own mind.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's perfectly logical that women are writing gay erotica. It's perfectly logical. Why is it taking so long?
Well, I think we would do a disservice if we didn't talk about the popularity of yaoi and boys' love in Japan and Korea, which is an entire erotica branch of manga, which is almost entirely made by women and for women. And at least in the Japanese context, where gender roles are way more strict than in the West, because we've actually been deconstructing them piece by piece since the 50s or 60s. In Japan, they actually feel that you can deconstruct them, but still adhere to them. Mm-hmm. And part of that has to do with Shintoism and the sort of national animist religion of Japan. But anyway... one of the reasons why boys' love and yaoi is so popular in Japan is because it lets them tell a story between equals. So when you have two men or two women, you can explore a relationship without power dynamics and without preconceived roles, and you can talk about... because when you have two men together, neither one of them is the one that cleans up. They have to negotiate it.
Yes.
So the whole relationship, everything from start to finish... is a long negotiation. This is way more dramatic in Southeast Asian culture, where, and not only that, but also Confucianism, which has its fingers on everything in the Southeast. Just this idea of being able to circumvent normal social roles and get straight at the romance, and one of the quickest ways of doing that is to sort of ignore the genders and make two men. Now, they do have their analogs, so they usually have the taller one and the shorter one, and one's more masculine and one's a little bit more, let's say, delicate. I don't want to say feminine because I don't want to feminize men. Unless they want to be, but that's not the point. But this is a dramatic case, but in Western culture, I think it's probably the same thing, but on a smaller scale. One of the reasons why you see so many women writing and so many women consuming gay male erotica.
That's a huge draw for me.
Yeah.
Is the power dynamic. You don't have to worry about it, and you don't have to think about it, which is wonderful. Like,
unless
that
you create it yourself, unless you want it.
Yeah, well, that's right. Like in a BDSM scenario or something like that.
We're very good at doing that.
Oh.
I want to pick up on something that you said, Michael. You said a good writer can be any of the characters.
Yes.
And actually, I interviewed Amy Nicole Walker, who is also a gay male erotica writer, out of Cincinnati. Unfortunately, that interview got corrupted. We're hoping to make a re-interview. But what I found interesting, I asked kind of where did she draw her inspiration from? And her answer very much was, you know, I could see two men walking, holding hands, and I'd have the whole lives imagined in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think, you know, that's...
I think the better for answer was binoculars. One word, binoculars.
Well, there has to be a sense of voyeurism if you're a writer.
Oh, yes.
Because, you're creating it, but you have to envision it before you create it.
I'm watching it in my head as I'm writing it. It's a movie in my head. Like,
nice.
Totally.
And I've done a lot of writing as well. Not anything published, but I have written things that are fiction. to varying degrees of success. I get the whole seeing it and writing it down. It's like you almost don't control the narrative, you just write what you see.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I get that. But then a part of me, as a like an LGBT community person, is like, well, how are these straight women drawing on our experiences? How are they accurately or inaccurately reflecting them? And I think that's an interesting, almost political question around
gay
erotica. Can I address them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's something that's really important to me, particularly because although I realize that most people reading this are women, I really value the opinions of gay men that are reading my work, and I want my work to appeal to gay men as well. So I do try to make it as accurate as I can, and that's where it comes into speaking to Mike and involving myself in the Ottawa kink community, mm-hmm. and speaking to all these people, and that's where I got a lot of inspiration. Well, I mean, all the inspiration for the James Lucas trilogy really was speaking to people and coming up with the story idea. And
you did share a few pieces with me for my input.
Yes.
And, you know, there were some some minor adjustments,
yes.
I suggested.
Oh, yeah.
Completely
for sure,
minor.
For sure.
That were more of the nuance than mm-hmm. of anything really substantial.
And there was even an educational seminar at one point, too.
and you wrote about that on your blog, and I've shared it many times with people. Mike, tell me more about... And I go, here's a review. You can read all about
it. Was it little things like, if you know you're getting laid, you don't leave the lube in the side table, you hide it under the pillow so you can just reach for it? Like,
or you put it right out in the open.
It's not a secret.
Yeah, right out in the open. If it's in the drawer, it's like, oh man, you got to disengage to get it.
There's right. also the white towel, beige towel.
I've heard of that.
Yes. Okay.
Or the candlestick. If it's lying down, somebody's not interested.
Oh, that's
yeah.
good. I like that.
I think that's important because people tend to forget that there is maybe not people who listen to our mm-hmm. show because
there's logistics involved.
Well, yeah. Okay, I was going to talk about queer culture.
Oh, okay. I know this is sort of an extension of it. Like,
it is
learning
real.
How to be a gay man is learning the logistics of how
Absolutely.
A lot of this stuff works
yeah.
because it's not like in porno where you just take your pants off and stick it in. There's a song and dance that
oh
goes on
God.
Beforehand.
I wish the under 30s would understand that gay sex is not a porno.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's
that's a whole other issue though.
Messy.
Yeah, yeah. That's an hour and a half.
Yes.
Easily. And I think what I was speaking to here is like, so Opal set some of her work in Ottawa.
Yes.
Some of the when writing as Ruby Caru, the kind of the short erotica pieces that's set in Ottawa. Now, Ottawa has a very has a distinct queer culture. So we had Centredown Pub, which closed, you know, and that had its very own atmosphere and
yeah.
feel, and it, and you know, the Pink Flamingo that came and went with the wind, and
oh, yes.
there's a lot of things that happened. The history of the murder of Alain Brosseau, the fact that it's a city government town, and how
mm-hmm.
that kind of government feel interacts with the gay community in really interesting ways.
Well, not only that, but whenever you get any conservative community of any kind,
mm-hmm.
Bedroom community, because I grew up in Burlington, which is a very much a bedroom community, very conservative on the surface. But the more conservative something is on the surface,
the wilder it is in the basement.
Yeah, and not like fun wild. Like sometimes,
no, it's bizarre.
Sometimes creepy wild. Yeah.
Some of the clientele that I deal with, I get all kinds of opportunities to do sex ed
mm-hmm.
And relationship advice.
Yeah,
3/4 of what I do seems to be counseling. but in terms of the gay clientele that I have, so many times it's like, I'm having trouble in my relationship and I really, really want to fix it and I have no idea how.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I suggest, why don't you read some erotica to each other or hold hands, you know, touch each other for more than a half a second, peck
mm-hmm.
on the cheek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
I think that actually, and maybe this is in your writing, I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but I will be.
Good.
And I think that's part of, I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because a large part of intimacy is just that feel, the touch and the pressure, not just the peck of the cheek and straight down to action.
Yeah.
It's about that kind of
the
building.
Up, yeah.
And I think that maybe is where like massage therapy kind of maybe steps in the gap there, because that's all about touch.
It's all about touch, and all responses are valid. Some people get response A or B, some get B or D, some, you know, they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
If you're less interested as a listener in reading erotica, but you are interested in this sort of thing, there is also porn
yeah.
with gay men made for women, which is like 70% kissing and touching.
Yeah.
And then...
It's, we would call it soft porn.
No. Then they
it's
stick it in.
It, yeah. But it's not the hardcore porn.
Mm.
It's done with a more of a filtered lens, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about, you know, 50% heavy breathing.
And these are
the first 20 minutes is heavy petting.
I can't watch straight porn, frankly. I can't watch
it. Oh, there are parts I can
watch.
Horrendous,
usually.
Yeah, and we all know what it is, but that's
yeah.
not why we watch it.
No, but
we watch it for other things.
So geared towards straight men.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so gay porn, like, it's funny because I went to a screening of Magic Mike. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but in the commercial, it seemed like they're at a strip joint, right? So it seemed like they would be stripping and actually being naked, but no, because it was for women, there was no nakedness in the strip. It was ridiculous. Anyway, so I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I could have just watched gay porn at home and women were more interested in this. And it was funny because all the women were like, oh my God, and they were screaming.
They're so limited in their experience.
Oh my God.
So many people.
Yeah.
And is that perhaps where gay erotica kind of steps in to fill that product gap, that kind
gap in the market? So. What do you mean, like, in terms of...
It is a woman whose only option is Magic Mike.
Yes, absolutely.
Fifty Shades of Grey.
Because the men in gay porn tend to be a lot more attractive than most of the men in straight porn.
Absolutely.
Straight porn. And... yeah, I don't know. And again, you don't have to worry about that power imbalance or the feminism. And, you know, you can, I'm an observer, so I can forget about all that.
And in so much porn, in gay porn, there's so many actors who do everything.
Yeah.
No real defined role.
Yeah.
Sure, there's a marketed first time bottoming and so on and so on. But almost everybody's versatile.
Yeah.
In reality, it's also... Oh, wait, I don't know where I was going to go with this.
Well, my husband knows if he wants to get me in the mood, he put on gay porn, because the straight porn is going to turn me right off. So
that's an interesting dynamic. He's thoroughly accepting of your chosen occupation terms of writing gay erotica.
Yeah.
And I know that in your blog post, you've mentioned sometimes how he just gives you a look and shakes his head and carries on.
Yeah, I mean, I think he finds it amusing, but also interesting. And like, he doesn't read my books. He's read bits of them if I've asked him for, like, general advice. Mm-hmm. But because it doesn't do anything for him. He doesn't really have an interest in reading it, but... He's really proud of the fact that I write it and that I publish it and that I'm not afraid to do something that not everybody does as a woman. And I love that about him.
Is there a social stigma to being an erotica writer?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Well, it depends. I mean, you got to understand, I'm a mom. So up until the last couple of years, I've been mostly hanging out at the school, picking up my kids. So I'm talking to other moms. It's a very suburban environment.
Okay.
So when I talk about my writing, I sort of go through a few levels. So I say I'm a published writer, and they're like, oh, that's great. What do you write? And I'm like, erotica, actually. And again, usually they're like, oh, wow, that's awesome. And then I have to gauge, and then I might progress to telling them, well, actually, it's gay erotica. And then at that point, a lot of them are, oh, okay.
But I can imagine a lot of them would also be more...
The back of the mind, they're going,
wow, this is fascinating.
Yeah, probably.
There was such a thing.
Actually, but some of them are like, oh, well, I don't want to talk about it anymore. You have to sort of... Be careful. No, that's okay.
I was just thinking, I remember what I was about to say before. My mind went.
That's okay.
In Western culture, the way that we talk about women's bodies, you know, this whole sort of like Rubenesque narrative and that every woman is beautiful in their own way, but then when you talk about men, you've got like one kind of attractive man.
Mm.
And on the rare... Well, we're talking about popular culture.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on the rare occasion when a penis makes its way into a Hollywood film, it's always a punchline. Like, male nudity is... comedic, and the male form is hilarious and goofy, and it's not treated as being a beautiful thing. And that if you're not aged 18 to 27 with visible abs and a narrow waist and broad shoulders, you're not allowed to be considered sexual. Whereas
essentially, if you weren't cast in the TV show Spartacus, then that's it.
Right.
Spartacus.
Oh yeah, I'm just wiping my chin here.
There are. Actually, this is one of the things that the Full Monty did really well, is they acknowledged the fact that there's more than one way to be an attractive man.
For sure.
Yes.
And
it spawned an industry of normal guys being erotic.
And you do see a little bit more of that, because I actually have read some of the fanfics, and they're more willing to acknowledge people who do not have, you know, greased up, hairless bodies as being attractive, or, you know, some of the characters that make their way into slash fiction is not the people you would expect. I mean, the sexiest man of the year, I think it was 97, was Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
And it was because of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And his answer was, that's preposterous. What's wrong with all of you? And the only response he heard that he did not reject outright was that it was because of who he was as a man. It wasn't just his look, although his age is very well.
Incredibly good looking man.
Yes, he is. And it's his bearing and the way he does everything. He's so charismatic.
And he's kind of regal.
Yeah.
Random aside,
there was a meme circulating because Patrick Stewart did Went in Drag for an episode of Blunt Talk, and they've compared him in drag to Kellyanne Conway.
And the memes recently are all Patrick Stewart as Kellyanne Conway. And they're just hilarious.
They are fantastic. Now, you said earlier that you actually drew inspiration from Opal. Can you tell us a bit about how that happened?
Well, it was just the idea, I guess, that I could actually maybe write erotica and have it published, because I'd never thought it was possible for me. And I found out that Opal Carew lived in Ottawa, and she was well known for her erotic books. Mm-hmm. And my friend gave me one of her books, and I read some of it, and I was like, oh, I can do this. I can totally do this. So I actually wrote some straight erotica to show my husband and to show his friend that had given me the book, and they thought it was great. So then I was looking for publishers, and I came across MLR Press, which is Man Love Romance Press, which is the publisher that I write for. And they had a page-long description of exactly what they like to publish. And they said they weren't looking for submissions at the time, so I was kind of like, oh, but they said, if you think that your writing is what we like, then send a couple of pages in and we'll have a look at it. So I sent a 2-page excerpt of Exposure, which I hadn't even finished writing the first draft. And 2 weeks later, I got an email back saying, that's exactly what we like to publish. Send us the completed manuscript. So I had to quickly go through it for spelling and grammar. Yeah, and it was really, really exciting. Yeah, and so I sent it in, and then it took like 9 weeks or something, and then they sent me the contract and said there was just a little bit of editing to do on the timeline was a little off, but I said I'll do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very exciting. Good. So, but basically, I wrote Exposure, my first ebook for MLR Press. Mm-hmm. But when I read the description, it was something that I would totally like. It was something that I was really excited about writing. Mm-hmm.
Actually, Opal earlier in the show mentioned that the advice that she would give to somebody who would consider writing erotica is very much just to read erotica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get an idea of what you're interested in, what you believe you can write. Because you mentioned earlier, you know, you saw it and you're like, oh, I can write that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of have a go. Have you, either of you two, attempted writing erotica?
I have written many snippets and short stories. My previous partner, he sat me down and said, you really need to consider a career in writing porn, because this is incredible. And I haven't done anything with it since.
I would say that when you look at men who produce gay erotica, who produce gay erotica, they tend to fall into two camps. One is poetry. There's actually a lot of erotic poetry out there.
Yeah.
Probably the most well-known is W.H. Auden's The Platonic Blow. Which, if you read it out loud, it takes like 15 minutes. It's a long poem. And it is like step by step, meeting the guy, seducing the guy, taking him home, taking his pants off. Like, it's every single step in, not pentameter, quadrameter. It's in quadrameter. So it's really well done. The other is sort of a comedic erotica. So David Sedaris wrote a couple erotic books. And being David Sedaris, he's kind of a satirist. So it was kind of comedic. And the other is Chuck Tingle, who has been in the news lately.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Tingle is an extension of what's known as bizarro fiction. And bizarro fiction, basically, the idea behind it is, it was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, people noticed that sculpture and painting and visual arts went through a surrealist phase. Theater went through a surrealist phase, which would be Dada. Movies went through a surrealist phase, so that would be largely the 70s and 80s. But you don't really get surreal novels, and so they started writing surrealist novels. My favorite one that I've read so far is called Shatner Quake, And it's about every fictional character that William Shatner has ever played being pulled into reality where they all have the instinct to kill the original. And so
wow.
It's William Shatner versus all the Shatners.
The most dangerous game all over again.
It's fantastic. And he had to mercy kill the animated version of himself because he was only two-dimensional. So, I mean, it's a ridiculous book. Anyway, so Chuck Tingle makes bizarro erotica, and actually he got a Hugo nomination, which was very controversial. So the Hugos are basically, I hate saying the Oscars of, because it's always kind of offensive,
right,
to people who get the awards.
It's a standalone.
Yeah. The Hugos are basically like, it's the preeminent literary award for science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And largely it was a protest vote where people felt that they needed to get literary experts and not public voting. And so there's a block vote to get Space Raptor Butt Invasion a Hugo Award.
Yes.
And it's basically what it sounds like. It's I have read it.
It's
it
what
is
it sounds like.
It's a velociraptor in a spacesuit comes down to Earth and, you know, has an erotic good time.
I've read many porns like that. I mean, erotica stories.
Yes. He's also known for his, what's considered like his tour de force is Pounded in the Butt by My Own Butt, which is a Chuck Tingle classic. There's, what else have I, ones that I've, anyway, so My Billionaire Triceratops Craves Gay Ass, or Taken by the Gay Unicorn Biker. I actually have a book at home that I forgot to bring with me that is entirely unicorn erotica fiction.
Oh my god.
And I have another
there
one.
There literally is nothing new
that's
under the sun.
Hilarious.
Yeah. And the other one, actually, I was given another one for Christmas that I like a little bit better, and it's called Tales to Tingle Your Butt, and it's horror short stories, so one of them is a vampire bus, and it's an actual bus that is also a vampire that also has a large penis, basically, that goes around having sex with its riders, but they're like, you're not going to turn me into a vampire, are you? And they're like, oh no, that's just a myth, that's a stereotype. And then actually, if you have sex with the vampire bus, you turn into a bus.
That's crazy.
Okay, then.
And the bus is at the back, under the rear seat. So, but anyway.
Yeah.
So it's very surreal. He has a wonderful Twitter feed. And he's actually, I've mentioned him before on the show, because he tweeted what is starting to become the accepted interpretation of what it means to be an alternative fact. And an alternative fact is a true fact, but from an alternative timeline. And so he talks a lot about timelines now, and it's really hilarious. And when La La Land was misawarded the Oscar,
the alternate reality,
he came out with an erotica about it by the next morning, and it was on Amazon online. And after the Putin Trump visit, within 12 hours, there was an erotica about that as well.
Oh my
and
gosh.
So, you know, a lot of people are saying, how do you do it so quickly? First of all, he clearly doesn't edit, because if you read his work, the grammar and punctuation. Honestly, he just sits down and writes. But the other thing is, he says that he has seen every timeline and he has many stories ready to go just in case those events happen in this one. And so he's a satire writer, but I mean,
and he's a good marketer.
He's very good at marketing.
I need to work on my titles.
What I'm trying to get at, though, is that when you look at like erotic fiction about gay men written by gay men, it tends to be either sort of artful in form, mm-hmm, or satirical in form, and you don't actually get much.
There's no meat and potatoes.
There's no meat and potatoes. Yeah, you don't.
But we get the meat and potatoes from women.
Yes,
I think.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is it the women are always doing the kitchen?
We're gonna get complaints.
And then you said it right there. I'm just like, why are
absolutely
we?
Okay. Well, I think we are just about out of time, unfortunately. Would you have any comments for any listeners who might be thinking, you know what, this has inspired me to write erotica, be it unicorns doing unsavory things, or just straight up gay male erotica? What would you give in terms of advice to anyone listening?
Well, it's never been more accessible because of ebooks and self-publishing. So if you want to do it, go for it. Hire a good editor. or get in with a publisher who can give you an editor, because that's huge. But yeah, go for it. There's so many avenues right now.
And what about consuming erotica? Because erotica has sort of a reputation of being corny or poorly written, or just very like geared towards something that may not be into you. Now, as Mike keeps saying, it's all out there. There's something for everyone in the erotica universe. How do you find it?
Well, I, for myself, because I'm very, very picky about what I will read. So,
well, you'll read to the end.
What I'll actually finish. Yeah. But so I tend to, I try to have a look through it if I can, and get a little bit of a sample first, or read some reviews. Mm-hmm. It's tricky though, but usually you can tell from a page or two whether the writing is decent and whether it's going to resonate.
Would you consider doing what Opal does by sharing extracts to kind of get people...
Of course.
Familiar and hooked, and maybe that's a good way to build up a fan base.
Absolutely, that's the best way. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that is all we have time for today. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget to reach out to us at TalkHandQueer and on Facebook. I believe that you have a Facebook page as well.
Well, I have a Facebook profile under Elizabeth Lister, and yeah, I'll friend anybody. So come on board.
If not, don't forget, you can find everybody on Google. Now, Sebastian here is going to critique me immediately when I announce that our closing out artist is...
Do you want me to just say it?
Yes, please.
It's Cœur de Pirate.
With adieu, and we'll be back next week. This has been Can Queer. Thanks for listening.
You're welcome. Thanks
Thank
for
you. This has been fun.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Sur ta chemise, qui a de boutons éclatés, sur ton corps qui me repoussait. Tu fais l'amour en deux poussées, l'amour le manque la tournée. Et pendant que tu t'articules, moi je soupire et toi tu m'aimes. Le menace est parti, parce que je hurle quand tu chantes tes souvenirs. Eh bien chérie, prends donc la peur, car tu sais que plus rien. Gentil, ça va comme ça. Mes amis, j'en ai plein déjà. Je n'aurai donc plus à t'entendre rentrer la nuit quand j'attends l'aube qui arrive en poussant les airs. Moi, je me lève et toi, tu meurs. Menace de pas.